Chapter 15. Friends and Foes. Etienne Bock came out of drugged sleep into a close, warm darkness without a single photon of light. His uniform stank of chemicals that made him want to retch. "Hello," he said. There was no reply. He reached about him in the pitch dark. His hands patted the warm bodies of other men. He felt down his front. He was still dressed in his uniform and webbing, but his gun was gone. They had even taken his bayonet, leaving him an empty sheath. He shook the bodies. They had pulses, but they slept.
"Hello," he said. "Hello, can you hear me?"
"Quiet,"
hissed a voice somewhere off to the left. In the dark, it sounded closer than it was.
"They'll hear you,"
the man whispered frantically.
"You don't want them to hear you."
Etienne Bock groped his way to the source of the voice. His foot rolled on the shin of an unconscious man, and he fell onto more prone bodies. Wherever he was, it was packed full of men.
"Where are we?"
he said.
"In the hold of the warding." "We haven't even left the ship."
His hand touched an ankle.
"Get off,"
said the owner. The ankle withdrew itself quickly. Etienne turned to face the voice.
"Found you.
Leave me alone."
"Not until you tell me what's going on."
"Go away. I don't want them to take me."
"Who are you?"
The man made a reluctant sound.
"First Watcher, Suruk Reming, 4th Battalion." "I don't know you,"
said Etienne Bock.
"I'm Etienne Bock."
"Well, I don't know you either. Now go away."
"Listen, you. I'm a lieutenant."
This was a lie. Etienne was as lowly as you could get.
"So I outrank you?" "Who are they? What do they want?"
Etienne asked the dark.
"Don't you remember?"
Etienne shook his head, then realised the man could not see.
"Nothing. We were en route to Beta Garmin 2. It fell. We were diverted to Beta Garmin 3,
he said as he pieced together the information from his foggy mind.
"To join with other regiments from the homeworld?"
"And the homeworld is?"
Etienne screwed up his face.
Fasadia,
he said. The name provoked a gush of memory, like he'd pulled a little stone from a dam and been rewarded with a stream of clear water.
"Well done. You haven't lost your mind," said Reming.
Boots dragged on metal. The man was sitting up.
"You're not an officer. I've not called you sir once and you haven't mentioned it."
"Fair enough,"
said Etienne Bock.
"I'm a line gunner."
"That's all?"
"That's all."
"Then you should call me sir,"
said Reming.
"Sir,"
said Etienne. Suruk Reming's tone changed. A vestige of authority returned to his voice.
"Do you remember the attack?"
"What attack?"
"No, then."
Reming scrambled forwards. Etienne felt breath against his face. It was sour with dehydration.
"They came quickly, took the transports unawares. They must have got into the atmospheric systems because they gassed us all."
"That awful smell on me clothes."
"That awful smell. Now, please, be quiet. They only come when there's noise. When you're awake is when they take you away."
"Where?"
"I don't know. I don't want to find out."
Etienne sat down and pulled his knees up to his chest. More was coming back to him. He remembered the alarm and the sound of assault craft hitting the hull and locking on. He remembered being shouted out of his bunk, grabbing his las gun and running. Running towards... A couple of other men were groaning. One began to shout in panic.
Oh no,
said Reming.
"Shut up,"
he hissed.
"Shut up."
His plea was quiet and desperate and went unheeded. Booming footsteps rang outside the darkness, then stopped. A door unlocked and slid open. Three space marines stood in the illumination of the space outside the hold. Etienne Bock's eyes were dazzled a moment, but recovered enough to let him see his surroundings. He saw a space far bigger than he had expected. There were men like Etienne everywhere, crammed into a hold that stretched away into dimness, well beyond the touch of the light. Some of the men were quite clearly dead. He could not see what livery the space marines wore. All he could focus on were their glowing red eye lenses. He had a terrible fear of them. These were killers of men. Foolishly, he scrambled back, instantly drawing their attention.
"That one," said the space marine.
His voice was inhuman through his voxmeter.
That one! That one!
He pointed with every word. He looked upon Etan.
And those two,
he said, his finger held unwaveringly in Etan's direction.
Begin waking the rest. These are the last of the test subjects. Majors Protoss wants to begin full-scale processing as soon as his final calibrations are finished.
The Space Marines stamped carelessly through their prisoners, breaking bones and crushing the hands of those still unconscious. One stopped by Etan and reached out, down, down, his hand descending from such a great height, like a monster coming to steal him from his childhood bed. But the transhuman reached past Etan and grabbed a struggling man. It took a moment in his addled state to realize the man was Surak Remming.
"Now look what you've done," said Remming. "This is all your fault."
Another Space Marine grabbed Etan Bok, and his troubles began in earnest. The Space Marines hauled Etan, Remming, and a score of others into the corridor. There they arranged them into pairs, Etan next to Remming, manacled their hands together and marched them off into parts of the warding he had never been in before. The colours of their captors were clear now, sea-green, marked with eyes of brass, the sons of Horus themselves. The legionaries were giants beyond Etan's ability to tolerate. They towered over him, their massive suits of growling armour amplifying the terror he felt. He had to run to keep up with their stride. When the captive slowed, the Space Marines responded with ungentle handling. Armoured transhuman grips broke human limbs. Fear of bodily harm kept him moving as they headed down from the cargo hold. He had no idea which direction they were going in, or what part of the ship they had entered, but the air grew hotter, and echoing up the way came the sound of machinery and screaming. He glanced at Remming. He was staring wide with terror, skin white, eyes bulging, his crotch dampened by his fear-loosened bladder.
"Don't look at me,"
Remming said from the corner of his mouth. They were the last words the two ever exchanged, for shortly after they were herded into a chamber full of smoke and fire and separated. Hundreds of improvised medical tables lined the room in neat ranks, tended to by terrified menials and blank-eyed servitors. The tables had been cut from iron plating and equipped with cargo straps refashioned as restraints. All save a handful at the centre of the room were unoccupied. It was from there that the screaming came, and it was to them that Etan and the others were inevitably taken. The legionaries drove them with fists and curses into a circle of light surrounded by machines. Blood spotted the rusty floor. Despite the medical appearance of the equipment, it was filthy. Whatever horror awaited Etan, he did not expect to survive it. A lone tech adept in black robes oversaw procedures. Five men lay strapped nearby tables, small devices fashioned from silvery metal clamped to their left temples. Servitors and frightened serfs stood over them. Four were either dead or unconscious. The other strained against his restraints, motionless and arch-backed as a fiddle bow, screaming endlessly.
"The last batch of test subjects," said the legionary's leader disdainfully.
He clearly thought the duty beneath him. His two men shoved the prisoners into one line that curved around the circle. The adept pulled back his hood, revealing a face of such advanced age that Etan was reminded of the caricatured marionettes from the theatres back home. He remembered the smell of the street outside. He remembered holding his father's hand.
"Hup, hip, here's old Father Time,"
sang the story master, stalking around the small round stage with his puppets dancing.
"Down, down, the aged king."
Young Etan enjoyed the story, but the old puppets gave him night terrors. The memory impinged upon him with such immediacy, he forgot for a second where he was. When he blinked and returned to the awful present, his limbs were weak as jelly. He feared he was going mad. The adept, who looked like the fears of his childhood, rose up, and up, much taller than a man of his age and build should be. It was then that Etan saw he had no legs, but long robes that swept down to the floor, tight around a circular bulge where his feet had once been, then loose, past that, to hang to the ground beneath.
"Oh, well, the last, eh?
Thank you so very much, said the Magos.
With a spirit of such contrived geniality, Ertan was suddenly totally terrified of him. The adept rose up higher until there was clear ground beneath the trailing hem of his habit and the deck. He floated along the line of 20 men, dipping down when he saw one that caught his eye, nodding and muttering as he appraised each, gripping faces and turning heads from side to side. He stopped before Ertan, who could not avoid flinching as the Magos sank down to admire him with eyes like black buttons.
I cannot think,
the Magos said. He held up his arm. The cloth fell back, revealing a silver augmetic hand.
I think I cannot think with that racket. Please make it stop.
One of his serfs bowed hastily, plucked up a surgical saw from a bench of similar instruments, and with great deliberate, entirely unskilled care, cut the screaming man's throat with four unsteady slices. The teeth on the saw rasped through flesh, gristle, then bone, each layer of tissue providing its own sickening sound. The man went slack in his restraints. His screams became gurgles, became silence. Blood sheeted onto the floor.
You'll do first, said the Magos,
and pointed at Ertan. Ertan stared back, frozen.
Yes, you. That's right. Come on.
The Magos hovered up and away, his silver hand beckoning Ertan to follow.
Come on, don't be shy. I don't intend to hurt you. I'm not a monster. We only cut the throats of the ones that don't work, do you see?
He said, still affecting the tones of a friendly Medicaid.
I'm sure you'll be fine.
A pair of menials took Etan's trembling arms. He allowed them to lead him to a gurney. One of the serfs, only slightly less terrorized than he, gestured at the table. Ertan sat on it.
That's the spirit. Better not to resist. It will hurt a lot less that way.
The Magos chuckled.
Lie down.
He fussed over a tray of devices with tiny silver kidneys, whose undersides sprouted wires finer than hair. In his fear-addled state, it took Ertan a moment to recognize them as the devices embedded in the dead man's skin. The Magos glanced over his shoulder.
I said lie down, man. Come on now. We haven't got all day.
Ertan looked at the three space marines. Their eye lenses stared back at him with naked hostility. Hesitantly, Ertan lay back. The Magos gestured sharply to his serfs, and they strapped him into place tightly.
I am Magos Ardim Protos, a tech priest of the most high rank. I am, or should I say I was, Prime Hermeticon of Sarum, said the priest, before I found common cause with more enlightened practitioners of the Ars Technologica, and abandoned such stale titles. Now, do you understand why you are here?
He picked up one of the bean-sized devices from the tray and looked at Ertan.
No,
said Ertan. The strap across his forehead crushed his head into the table. He struggled to see what the Magos was doing.
Sometimes I feel the same,
Protoss chuckled.
Go here, go there, do this, do that. Still, all done soon. You, my friend, should feel honored. You are to fight for the War Master.
Yes, of course, said Ertan. Anything.
The words turned his stomach, but his fear was greater than his shame.
Traitor,
hissed one of the other soldiers. A space marine cuffed him hard across the face. Bone broke, and he fell unconscious, dragging at the man chained to him. Remming whimpered.
You might say that, but you would. I understand this is frightening for you. All this strange equipment and a Magos of my rank about to perform who knows what terrible science upon you, hey? Hey?
He chuckled as if they were sharing a joke.
You are of the Dark Mechanicum.
Dark, is it? Dark?
He chuckled again. He stared at the silver device and sighed.
Dark is what our enemies call us. Ignorant is what we call them. New Mechanicum is the name we have for ourselves, and we are new, free of all those fussy little rules imposed on us by the Synod of Mars and the meddling Emperor of Terra. We have cast off tradition for the sake of enlightenment.
He spread his arms and looked upwards.
Now you are going to join our quest for knowledge. Become part of the great work. You are privileged, you know. I wasn't lying.
Etan tensed as the Magos brought his hideous young old face close to Etan's. His breath was unpleasantly sugary, with a hint of rot, the halitosis of a man with a penchant for sweets. He brought the silver device close to Etan's head.
"What is it?"
asked Etan.
"I do respect a man who asks questions. It is good to be aware of everything, especially when it concerns oneself."
He leaned closer.
"It's nothing very much. Something of a side project of mine. In fact, I've done very little, if I'm honest, beyond a few modifications. This is a Skitari interface system."
He looked affectionately at the device.
"We implant them in our cyborg warriors, you see. It enables them to access the Mechanicum infosphere, and that makes them far more responsive during battle than unmodified humans like you. But what is relevant here, for our purposes..."
He smiled again, exposing black teeth.
"Yours, and my purposes, I mean, is that they allow us to control our warriors. Sadly, we are running out of warriors. This war is taking far too long, and that rogue, Rogaldorn, keeps sending more and more and more men to fight here. We're short of reinforcements, and that gives us all a dilemma. We don't have time to upgrade the likes of you, which we could, of course. Then you would fight for us without a care, mostly because you wouldn't be capable of caring. There's no time for that. But we do have time to implant this little tiny piece of technology. With this, a warrior loyal to the Emperor and a meager measure of time, we can create a soldier who will die for the cause. The right course."
He pressed metal against Etan's temple. The wires tickled against his skin. And then they bit. Etan gritted his teeth against the pain. The wires threaded past blood cells, nerves and muscle. Tiny needles scraped against bone.
"I've modified them to modify you. Just an iota. An adjustment of loyalty. That is all."
The wires squirmed and plunged into the bone of Etan's skull. The pain was sudden and intense. No man could have stifled his screams.
"Yes, I'm sorry. The wiring has drilled into your skull. It will split now and bridge neuronal gaps. Make new connections. Soon you're not going to worry anymore, and the pain will go away, I promise."
Etan thrashed and howled. Ardim Protoss stroked his forehead with a cold metal hand.
"Shh,"
he said.
"Shh. Not long. Not long."
Etan bucked. He was screaming so hard his sinews stood out in his neck and he could not breathe. And then it was over. He fell limp. Blood trickled out of his nose.
"It worked,"
he heard the Space Marine say.
"Who do you follow?"
Protoss asked Etan Bok.
"The War Master,"
said Etan Bok. He was surprised at what he said, but his voice was no longer his own. His actions were not his own. Protoss gestured to his minions. They undid Etan.
"Stand,"
said Protoss. Etan stood. He could not stop himself. He was a prisoner in his own skull.
"There,"
said Protoss.
"It worked. We are ready."
Protoss went to a bank of machines and turned a dial. Scores of servitors stepped out of the shadows and marched in pairs to the head of each table. The Space Marine drew himself up, like he was shucking off the burden of boredom, and began to issue orders.
"Bring them in by the 200. We have 50,000 men to process before we make landing."
Human thralls scurried to obey. The Space Marine turned back to Protoss.
"These neuroslaves better serve our purpose."
From the corner of his staring eyes, Etan saw Protoss wince.
"Oh, I wish you wouldn't use that phrase,"
he said.
"It is so uncouth."